Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into RNIB Tech Talk, our chance each week to get together as blind and partially sighted people to explore the world of technology. Don't forget, of course, we are your show. We're always keen to hear about your technology experiences, good, bad or indifferent. You can contact us in the usual way. It's good old-fashioned email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K. @rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week on Tech Talk, we're going to be speaking with Troy Attilio from Aira about their new Access AI feature. We'll be hearing about how Welcome.me is making curry stores in the West Midlands more accessible, and we'll be speaking with RNIB's very own Sightless Combat about how blind and partially sighted gamers can get involved with a new survey. So that's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovic. Chaps, what's in your technology box this week? Hubert, let's come to you first.
There is a new device referred to as the Rabbit R1, which is currently available for pre-order, which claims to be a device that connects to your smartphone, which uses AI large action models in order to perform complex tasks for users to make things a little bit easier, such as using certain websites, carrying out certain functions. There's not much on about it at the moment. I've only seen an article from AbilityNet about this last week. It's a device that sounds like it's got a lot of potential, but a lot of it is yet to actually be seen. It comes in at £192 for pre-order in the UK. It's an interesting concept. It's similar. It sounds to me like the Typerhead screen reader, what we had talked about a few episodes ago, but in a form of another device, a palm-sized device, which is, if you are interested in this, in an eye-catching orange colour.
And do we know anything about accessibility?
That is what I'm hoping to chase up. So I'm currently looking to speak to AbilityNet about this to see how accessible it is, because it uses its own Rabbit OS operating system and connects to your smartphone. So I'm actually curious as to how a blind and partially sighted user would use it. So I'd say, hopefully stay tuned.
Yeah, let's hope so. Not a bad price as well, to be fair, that.
That's what surprised me. I was expecting it'll be a bit more expensive when I've seen this, but it's an interesting concept.
Depends what it does, though, doesn't it? And if it's not accessible, then it doesn't matter how much it costs. Callum, what do you got?
A new feature in Seeing AI that I've just spotted. I got the update to the app yesterday, and there's a new feature on there called Find My Things, which has been added to the World Channel. So I think the idea is that I think the World Channel, I must admit, I haven't really used it much, but I think by the sounds of it, it can identify objects that are around you. But what they say in their release notes is that generally AI is trained on just a generic set of, you know, pictures and images to, you know, to map objects. So it can kind of see something and go, oh yeah, that's a bag or that's a set of keys or something. But what this allows you to do, you take a few little short recordings, it guides you through, of your specific items. So if you've got a specific, you know, backpack or something, you can take a few different pictures of it and train the app to recognize that specific item, and it will, in future, it will recognize it and try and give you some directions towards it. So I haven't had a chance to play with this yet, but that sounds like it could be useful.
Do you need to have one of these new fancy schmancy LiDAR phones to make that work?
I don't think so. They say it will work as long as you've got an iPhone that runs iOS 14 or newer, which is a fair few of them. It doesn't say anything about LiDAR, and it's hard for me to test it because I've got a Pro, so mine does have LiDAR, and I know it works on mine, but they don't say anything that, from what I can find, about it is very new, so there's not much info about it beyond what they've put on the App Store release notes, but it doesn't say you need LiDAR. I imagine it would probably enhance the experience, but I don't think it's a requirement.
Although that might be a reason to get LiDAR if it works well. So maybe. We will look forward to hearing more about that. Have you used the Find My Things feature in Seeing AI? And have you read about the Rabbit R1? Let us know what you think about that. And anything else that's on your tech mind, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, thank you very much. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, as we all know, the big topic of conversation lately has been AI, and it feels like AI is absolutely everywhere at the minute. Especially for us in the blind community, we've seen all kinds of fantastic uses, you know, better, more detailed image recognition, more accurate OCR and contextual awareness, and being able to ask questions of documents and all that good stuff. And a well-known company in our community who has now joined this AI party, if you like, is Aira. And I'm delighted to be joined by Troy Attilio, the CEO of Aira, to talk to us about their new feature, Access AI. Troy, great to have you on Tech Talk. Thanks for joining us. Do you want to just start off? I'm sure people have heard of Aira, but do you want to just briefly, what is Aira?
Absolutely. First off, thanks for having me on, and to everyone listening, it's great to be here. So Aira is now almost a 10-year-old company. It was started by Simon Kanaganti, who was the founder, and I worked with him at a prior company when he started it, and I joined in the very beginning. And we've been on this journey that, by the way, started with AI. The name Aira stands for Artificial Intelligence Remote Assistance. But for those who may not know, Aira, up until I guess a month ago, was human only. So what it looks like is you download an app, or you can use it on the web, and you can press a button. You're connected to a remote agent, and that is a professional visual interpreter. And it's a service that people can either pay for or businesses and government pay for. We also have a free tier, and there's many ways to use Aira for free. For example, in the UK, GTR just launched a pilot that provides Aira for free to the folks who are using the railway. Either way, we've been around for quite a while, and we continue to grow both in terms of number of users, but also our vast network of access partners. Again, those are businesses primarily today in the US, but obviously we are starting to launch in the UK and hope to continue on that. Finally, I should say RNIB has been a great partner throughout the years, providing us both guidance and introductions to the community. So it's great to recognize the RNIB. So hopefully that covers the basics. It's an app. You download it. It's free. No credit card. You can use it. You can connect to an agent. And today we'll be talking about how you connect and work with AI and maybe in concert with an agent.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So the primary use of Aira is to connect to an actual human, mm-hmm. and a trained agent, as you said. But then, mm-hmm. so where does Access AI come in? What is this new feature?
So like all of us, like you said in the intro, generative AI has, you know, kind of stormed into our lives starting last year. And we all know that OpenAI was really the first to, you know, get a solid foothold and actually be useful, practical, efficient, and really, you know, provide an experience so you could interact with it and learn more. And then at some point they added the ability to interact with an image, right? Not just get a description, a one-shot description, but go back and forth, ask questions, et cetera, et cetera. And so when that came out, Aira was poised to make use of it. Be My Eyes got the early access, you know, congrats to them. And we waited until the API was public, because to build on Gen AI, you're going to need a central provider. Our AI does rest on top of OpenAI as well as the Google Gemini, but ultimately the experience is pretty simple. We do provide some additional benefits on top of what others do, but ultimately with the app, which is free, you can for free upload an image, you can take a picture and interact with the AI. And by interact, what I mean is you can take a picture and just have it give a default description. You can from there ask questions, ask for more detail, and basically work get the information in the way you want it, and use it as much as you want. There's no limit. There's no constraint. I'll give you a couple things that we do that I think are unique. And I should point out that we have built this with the community. It's a big point I wanted to make, that we started sometime back in November with working with 30 or 40 of our closest users or explorers, as we call them, who signed an NDA and became advisors. And we thought about lots of different things, not just the use cases, but the tone of the AI, like what is the language, the privacy and security concerns. So we built this with all that input and then started a internal beta program, which was limited to those 30 people to give us feedback on all those things. And it's last month that we at CSUN here in California, which is an accessibility conference, we opened up the beta. And so people today can get on the wait list. But back to the use case. So you have your phone, you have Aira installed, or you're sitting at your workstation and you have explore.aira.io, which is a web page up. Either way, it's our app. You present an image to the AI. You can get the description. You can ask questions. But what's unique about ours is that we've integrated our visual interpreters, those professional agents. So what we heard from our early advisors is that, hey, sometimes the AI hallucinates, or sometimes the AI simply won't give a description of a credit card, or sometimes I feel like there's something left out, I'm not confident. And we have the ability, or you have the ability with Aira for free, to engage an agent. And by that, you can ask for what we call as a verification, which is kind of like a extended chat. So let's say you've uploaded the image, you've gotten the description back. Let's say you want to know what lights are on your coffee maker, because it's to make coffee, you know, certain things have to be on or off. Or let's say you've taken a picture of a thermostat and you've got a description, and the description doesn't match what you feel on the thermostat in this hotel room. You can click the description the AI gave and ask for verification. And within about 30 seconds, you'll get back either a thumbs up from the agent, hey, things are accurate, the AI was accurate based on the image, or it'll come back with comments from the agent. It'll say the button to control the temperature is on the left and the button to control the fan is on the right. Let's say the AI didn't describe it, or, you know, perhaps described it incorrectly. Or if you're up and upload something about a coffee maker, it might, you know, maybe the AI came back saying that the light was purple, and you know that the light is either red or blue, and the agent would say that the light on the right is red and the light on the left is green. So hopefully that gives you an idea. I'm sure there's some questions you could ask about that, but really it's about that trust. Aira is a professional platform. It's secure. And it's efficient and also accurate. And so we're leveraging our agents to make sure that when you need that extra confidence, you can access these professional agents to get added information, added confidence around the interaction you have with the AI.
Right. And I think that's the main point here, isn't it? The main difference is that you're not only using the AI, but you're making use of those human agents to get verification. Because I found that it is hard to tell when the AI hallucinates, because for a start, mm-hmm. especially in my case, you can't see the photo, but then a lot of the time AI will give you the answer and it's so confident in its answer
mm-hmm.
that you just take that. So being able to get that human verification is, I guess, crucial really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're not going to stop here. There's a lot more on the roadmap that we think we can do better. It gets into some of the nuances of the use case, how you interact, et cetera, et cetera. But central to Aira is that the trust, which we work to maintain, we work to enhance, and that comes down to the ability, like you said, to get the, you know, the verification, understand if there is something that's hallucinating, or maybe just get a confirmation, right? You know, I'd say most of the time the AI is accurate, but you know, like you said, how would you know if you can't see the picture, you can't see the image clearly or detail, or Just generally, unable to know even if the picture was framed correctly. I mean, another issue that we see with AI is, explorers will take an image of something to get a description, but perhaps they didn't point the camera exactly at what they thought. They thought they were getting a bigger view of something, or they thought they were getting the entire paragraph of a written piece of text, but the agent will see it and notice that the image is not framed and might say something like, the description is accurate, yet the image only shows what appears to be half of the letter or the page that it was pointed at, right? So there's not just hallucinations, there's also just, the ability to inform you when perhaps the image itself that you provided the AI wasn't what you thought it was.
I'm interested in the background of this feature because Aira, as you said, AI is part of the name, but also the main focus has always been that human assistance. So what made you decide to go down this route of this AI offering?
What's funny is when Saman started the company, and many people may know, but not everyone, that Aira was founded using venture capital, which some companies in the accessibility market have been successful with. We were very successful, raised about $38 million overall, and that helped us develop a lot of things, including back in the day the glasses, which we might talk about. We also invested in AI, so up through 2020. We spent a considerable amount because we had that vision. We believe that AI could and would play a part in this visual interpreting experience. In fact, there was a point in time when we were fortunate to hire someone who had worked on Scene AI. I think we all know that that's a very popular app, and we tried very hard to develop an agent at that time. It was called Chloe, but we just couldn't get it to perform at a level that met people's needs. The underlying fundamentals of AI just weren't there. And so we put it on the shelf sometime in 2019 and 2020. And it wasn't until we saw the success of OpenAI and their ability to describe an image, interact with it, and then Gemini followed, that we decided that the time was right again to pick up that AI journey. So in our minds, we've always been for and using AI, and we have a lot of experience with it. It's just only in the last year that it became something that would meet the needs of our customers.
You've mentioned a lot about trust, and I do want to touch on that because Aira's, as we said before, professional service, professionally trained agents, and there's all sorts of confidentiality agreements that they've got to sign and agree to so that you can get them to read your credit card numbers to you, or you can get them to read a medical letter if you want to, or if you need to, knowing that that's going to be kept confidential and kept safe. How does AI change that, or does it change it in your case?
The security and the privacy that we provide is expressed in the terms of service and the privacy policy. And that's true for any product. If you want to know what the limits are, what the expectations are, and what the commitment is from a company, the details are in there. Now, I know in reality, many of us don't have the time, or we don't read. Some do. But we take our data handling very seriously, and that extends to the agent. Little fun fact, here in the US, you may have heard of a company called Intuit that make TurboTax. It's a commercial service, and it helps you file taxes. It does at least a third of the nation's taxes. And many of us, including myself, including Simon, came from Intuit. And so the mindset and the skill and the approach to privacy and security kind of comes from that experience. Like, how do you protect people's financial information? So we apply the same mindset, the same technique. And when it comes to AI, AI is just another piece of software or software system that is part of our entire operating system. And we use the commercial enterprise version of OpenAI, of Gemini. And if you read those privacy policies, they make the same statements, and they guarantee the same level of privacy and security that the rest of the components that Aira is built on have to meet. And so ultimately, those images that you upload, the text that you get back, and everything that you do with the AI is the same as what you might do with an agent. And in that process, your data is encrypted in transit, at rest. The data is not accessible by OpenAI. We are using their software, but they do not have access to the data. And as a detail for AI nerds, there's this question that's called model benefit. Does the model get better because the data that, for example, Aira is flowing through their generative AI solution? And the answer is no, because we're using the enterprise version. Is that important? Is that related to security? But it may or may not. There's different opinions. But what I'm trying to say is that ultimately, that the data that flows through the AI is owned, maintained by Aira, and it's not accessible by third parties like OpenAI.
And it's not being used to, I guess what you're saying there is it's not being used to kind of train these AI models, because there's often a concern about, for example, ChatGPT. It's using the conversations and the images that people send to it to, improve itself to learn. But in the case of Aira, that's not what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not the case. Our personal models are, let's see, our Aira proprietary models may improve, but the images that you're sharing and the interactions you're having is not generally improving OpenAI's general model. And it's not, yeah, it's retained just in a similar way. Like, we can think about the Aira agents. So forget about AI. Your interactions are observed, are recorded per the terms of our service and your consent and those kind of things. But ultimately, we're training our agents, conceptually. So we retain that data. We use it to improve our service. The same is true for the AI. Like, the interactions are used to improve our AI, not the general AI from OpenAI, or not the general AI from Gemini.
And we will have more from Callum's conversation with Troy Ottilio a bit later on in the show. When it comes to improving customer service for people with a whole range of disabilities, there is a solution which can make a huge difference to service providers and customers alike. Gavin Neitz from Neatbox is with us to tell us more, and there's also some news about a new venue that we're looking for your help to trial. Gavin, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Alan. Thanks very much indeed for having me on.
So for those who aren't aware of Welcome, how does it work? Why does it make things better if you're a service provider or a customer with a disability?
Back when I was a guide dog mobility instructor, I would be with my clients. I would walk into a shop and I would ask myself, why didn't that person introduce themselves? And then I would go up to the staff member afterwards and I'd say, oh, please make sure next time my client walks through the door, because they're visually impaired, they don't see your name badge. If you could introduce yourself, that would be really useful. And then I thought, well, that's not very efficient. And I think somebody turned up with a mobile phone during my time at Guide Dogs and their phone spoke to them. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be good if the mobile phone could communicate with the staff member? So my client could set up a profile on their phone, which would mean before they walked through the door at any venue that was using our system, they could communicate with the staff member before they walked through the door. And if they had a profile, that could automatically trigger training. Now, when it comes to staff training, there's a real challenge with making sure that all the staff that work for you have the kind of training that they need. And when you consider the amount of training they need nowadays and how many different types of disability and how many different needs there are, there's a real need to be trained. So it's a real challenge, but we've now managed to address that with Welcome.
So if I have a profile that says, this is Alan, he's blind, he's a guide dog owner, when he comes in, if you can introduce yourself, don't clap the dog, and maybe ask what he wants, if he wants an arm to go around the store, that kind of thing. So I'm kind of saying, here's me, here's what I need. And when I go to the venue, they will know that I'm on my way and they'll know how to help.
Exactly it. And if you think about the way that we're doing it right now, is if a disabled person goes in on their own, there's a sort of a bit of a clunky moment where you're trying to explain how best to be helped. But if you can automatically explain how to be helped before you arrive, just done digitally, then that can make all the difference. It means that you turn up and somebody goes, well, I know what to do. I know what they look like and I know how best to help them. So yeah, we launched it in the start of 2019 with only a handful of venues in Edinburgh, but we're up at probably about close to 220 venues across the United Kingdom and Republic of Ireland now. So it's growing all the time and the opportunities for people to use it are growing also.
How do you sign up then to use it? How do you create that profile that makes things better for you?
So signing up's really easy. It used to be an app and now it's what we call a web app. So you don't need to download anything. You just go to a website. And that website is my.well-co.me. The well is W-E-L. Rather than W-E-L-L. Sign up there and then your profile will give you access to roughly 220 venues across the United Kingdom and Republic of Ireland.
Now, I know you can, as a user, sort of suggest places for you to go to and ask if they will have Welcome installed in there. But I know at the moment that your newest one that you're trialling is the Currys, the electrical store, but you're looking for some help with that.
Currys are a phenomenal organization. Internally, you get a chance to meet these people that really do. They really do care about staff training and the customer and making sure that they provide services. So Currys, just in the last couple of years, have worked with Purple Tuesday. So they've been trained on the Sunflower Lanyard. They also have Quiet Hour once a week for people who are neurodiverse. So Currys are really going sort of the extra mile. But we had a little chat with Currys and they said, wow, Welcome has the opportunity to not just let people know that we're coming or that we need help, but also to help our staff learn a little bit more about the disabilities people might be living with. And we cover 31 different conditions on the platform, but working with Currys isn't something that you can do. You can't just roll it out to 300 venues instantly. Currys said, well, we'll put it into 20 venues to start with. And then what we will do is assess the use of the service and whether our staff like it and whether the people who are disabled like it. So they said, we will put it in 20 stores across the West Midlands. So north of Birmingham and south of Birmingham. If you're thinking of your map, it takes in places like Birmingham, Shrewsbury, Tamworth, Burton, Wolverhampton, Stoke, Leicester, Maryhill, Stafford, Telford, Cannock, Sutton, Wednesbury, Kidderminster, Stoke, Longton, Solihull, Loughborough, Leicester, St George's and Birmingham, Selioke. So any Currys store in the Midlands is going to have Welcome. And people can sign up for the platform, search for Currys that's in Birmingham or anywhere in these areas, and they'll be able to visit one of those venues.
If that's successful, then will they roll that across all their stores across the UK?
Well, that's the potential. That is the potential. If we can get a certain number of users before the end of April, so 28th of April, then they will seriously look at whether this can be rolled out. Now, we've been working with some amazing companies recently, and one of the other ones is Levi's. Levi's now have it in 13 of their stores from Manchester up to Glasgow, and including Glasgow, including Gretna, but also across in Belfast and Dublin. And they're also looking for people to use it. So it's increasing all the time. The more people use it, the more we can prove the Purple Pound exists. For years, we've talked about this £274 billion spent by disabled people every year. But there's not been many opportunities to prove that it actually exists. This is our chance to do that. If we can do that, we can actually dictate to companies the need to use solutions like Welcome to actually improve how well they deliver the service to the people who walk through the door. Nobody wants to be discriminated against. And what this does is it actually cuts that off at the pass and helps people avoid discrimination.
So we want people to give this a go, or if there are people out there, you might know someone who has a disability and live in that area, you want them to get in touch and to try this out. So how did they do it? Did they have to sign up to something? I take it they can't just turn up.
So you need to have a profile on Welcome. Now you can go back to that my.well-co.me and then you will find the Currys stores that are involved in the trial. However, I have got a website here that people can go to that will give them even more information about Welcome and the stores that are taking part. It's www.well, and that's W-E-L, hyphen, co.me, /welcome-at-Currys.
And you'll get all the details there to take part in the trial. What's the deadline again, Gavin?
28th of April. So we've not got much time. We wouldn't mind if people book a couple of weeks in advance. That's not a problem at all. So you can go on the platform, set up a profile, and then have a look, have a little play with it. And then if you can get to any of those venues, then book away up to 2 weeks in advance. It's easy to do. And of course, if you know people in the area, that's also useful. But Welcome exists across the country now. And if you've got a profile, you can, of course, visit any of the venues that are already out there, like the Levi's or Northlink Ferries in Scotland, or City of Westminster Council have it in all of their libraries and leisure centres now. CV Life in Coventry have it in a lot of their leisure centres. Newcastle's got loads of venues now, including hotels and museums. And I think today we've just launched with Vindolanda Roman Fort. So if you fancy a trip to a Roman fort, they've now got it on the platform.
He's everywhere. Good luck with the trial, and thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Always a pleasure, Alan.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and if you are a blind or partially sighted gamer and you wish to help RNIB with their work in accessible gaming, there's an opportunity for you to do so. What is it exactly? Well, joining me to tell us a little bit more about it is once again RNIB's accessible gaming officer, Mr. Sightless Combat. How are you?
Hello, I am doing well. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. So let's talk about this survey. What is it?
So this survey, you know, RNIB is working with a gaming studio, and we're looking at, you know, the preferences of gamers, you know, across the spectrum of sight loss, and, you know, experiences as well, to, you know, understand the impact, the enjoyment, you know, the current experiences you're going through in terms of how you find gaming, how you found gaming if you are an ex-gamer with sight loss as well. So there's a lot to look at, and it's just to kind of get that information to then you know, move forward with things. And there are opportunities after you filled out the survey as well to, you know, go for interviews, etc. as well. It's all outlined on the page itself, as you've, you know, after you've filled out all of the questions and things.
What is the deadline for this survey to be completed by?
So the deadline for you to share all of your knowledge, insight, and you know, ideas and things is May the 1st via this survey.
If you wish to take part in this survey, we will include the link to it in the description of the podcast version of this interview, so you can find it there. For now, though, RNIB's accessible gaming officer, Sightless Combat, where can people find out more information about accessible gaming?
So if you want to find out information directly from me in terms of my experiences and discuss your own as well, then you can find me on my socials, that is Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, etc., as Sightless Combat, SIGHTLESSKOMBAT. And of course, you can also email RNIB's gaming address, gaming@rnib.org.uk, to throw your inquiries there. And additionally, you can look at RNIB's Design for Every Gamer page at rnib.in/designforeverygamer. And even sign up to the player panel should you be interested in pursuing further opportunities.
Excellent. Well, hope you enjoy filling out the survey. And thank you very much, Mr. Sightless Combat, Accessible Gaming Officer for the RNIB, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
We will hear more now from Callum's conversation with Troy Attilio from IRA.
Are there any cases where, either for privacy reasons or just for the general experience, you would always recommend using an agent rather than using Access AI?
I think it's still early. It is in beta, to be very clear. And I think we're still learning what are the common pitfalls. It's a hope, or it's on our journey line to, at some point, be able to provide some level of an accuracy rating or some indication to you, so that you would know, you know, what to expect. Because there are certain situations we're starting to see some trends, but I don't want to say yet, because I don't know that they're statistically significant, and I don't want to mislead people. But there are certain use cases that we are seeing that are often less accurate, less likely to be trusted. Like I said, it's way too early. There's also just situations where the AI will refuse to provide information. In fact, it's kind of a fun package. You can actually ask the AI. That's one of the beauties of the AI, including ours. You could ask the question, what type of images or what type of content will you not describe? And they do include things like credit card. So if you present a credit card to most any AI, whether that's Be My Eyes, Ira, or others, unless someone's using a truly custom AI, in other words, not leveraging OpenAI, not leveraging Gemini, the AI will refuse to describe it. And we could talk about why, but there are definitely certain use cases. Medical information is one, prescription bottles. There's some constraints that the vendors of AI are putting on the AI. A little fun sidebar: on Monday, I was talking to, invited to talk to a Harvard law class where they were discussing the ethics and legality of AI. And I was presenting the view that I believe the blind community generally has, but certainly certain members of the blind community, you know, here in the US, the NFB, I was talking to Anil Lewis, and you know, I was asking him, what do you think the limits of AI should be in terms of what it can describe? And his answer is, I think, a good one. It's if a sighted person can see something and understand it or describe it to someone else, then so should the AI. But today, there's a bunch of use cases, you know, whether it involves nudity, whether it involves illegal activities, you know, which then gets to the question of, well, who defines that and what laws and what morality, gets into some fun ethics. But there are certain use cases the AI will just refuse to describe. And obviously, that's a place where, you know, using Ira and an agent, a live agent, would be a good alternative.
That's a discussion that's just going to rumble on and on, isn't it? About what can AI describe? Should it be different for blind people? And should it...
Exactly, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of... I realize you wouldn't want to necessarily talk about a competitor, but Be My Eyes had a discussion, similar challenge, I guess, with describing facial, describing faces, basically.
Yeah.
There was a whole discussion about that as well.
And by the way, yeah, it's a funny thing. You know, we're quite friendly with Be My Eyes. Some people look at them as a competitor. Mike and I agree we don't compete. Really, I'd say the real goal, I think, that we both have is to increase the use of what generically you might call as visual interpretation. It's still such a new concept, even though a lot of people use it. I would say the market penetration of that type of accessibility tool is still growing. Like everyone who uses a desktop, you know, has a screen reader, whatever their choice of tool is, but not everyone is aware of or uses visual interpretation. So the point is, you know, Mike and I collaborate quite a bit, and we were actually on the stage at another event and literally talking about what we just did, like what are the limitations of AI. And so a lot of us, including Vespero, who's using AI, including Envision, we're all using these underlying vendors, and we'll be limited to what those vendors can provide or what they're willing to provide. And so, yeah, that whole point for a while that the facial describing a face, which is not facial recognition, was limited for a while. And I think enough people squawked or OpenAI thought more carefully about it and they turned it back on. I suspect we're going to see an ebb and flow and, you know, different use cases that would benefit this community that are kind of fenced off. And it's in part Ira's job, it's part the community's job, probably RNIB's job to make those AI vendors aware of the implications and maybe sometimes unintended implications of limiting AI.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of pricing for this, so Ira, as you mentioned, Access AI is free.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Ira itself is free, although there are premium tiers that you can subscribe to for more minutes. Do you expect pricing to change when Access AI gets more popular or comes out of its beta phase? I know it's early days yet, but Do you, for example, do you expect it to congratulate?
Let me comment on two things. Yeah, for sure. First off, independent of AI, et cetera, we are not raising pricing in 2025 for individuals. And the second point I always want to make is we have pricing on our page, but it does say to call for consumer pricing. And the consumer pricing is far less expensive if you truly are a consumer than what we publish on the website. And so if you call the our support line, we call it customer care, there's a phone number you can also email. They will walk you through the different plans. But the change I do want to see on consumer pricing is I have asked my team to figure out how to lower the consumer pricing. It's still too expensive. As we grow our business, as we grow our access partners, we hope to, you know, increase the ability to optimize our systems, like the more usage, the more efficient we can deliver it, and then pass those savings on to the consumers. So I want to make that point first. Second, on AI itself, there is an underlying cost that everyone is paying. It's pretty small on a per image basis, but you know, I think Mike was telling me, Be My Eyes did about 1.2 million images last month. And I think you can ask AI itself what it costs to process an image. And it's you know, it's around a cent and a half. So that starts to add up. And the question then is, you know, how does a company absorb that cost? Or do they pass it on? I've told my team we're not expecting to pass on any costs in the next year. We're still looking to make sure we can find the best, call it market fit, like make sure we have the best experience, and we'll figure out if we need to pass costs on. But at this point, especially if other vendors aren't right, it'd be silly for Ira to charge for AI if no one else is. And at the cost and the volume that we're talking about, it definitely fits, and we can absorb that cost. So I actually hope that we never charge for AI. I hope that AI gets cheaper in general, and therefore we can absorb more and more volume without having to even think about that. So there are no plans to charge for AI this year, and I'm expecting not to add anything next year. Who knows? Maybe there's some premium use case that gets really expensive. Maybe there's something we don't know, but as the market stands today, I don't expect to charge for the AI.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, obviously it's got to be sustainable. You've got to be able to fund it, but yeah, it's good to know that we can get into this now. We can use it, and it won't be contributing. If you are on a premium tier, it won't contribute to any of your minutes either, will it, if you get that verification?
Yeah. And that's another nuance to think about, because I've had people say, hey, all that verification going on, Troy, is that going to affect wait times? Because we did suffer long wait times, I'd say, in the last quarter of last year. We didn't keep up with our hiring. And so right now, those verifications happen pretty quick. And you might imagine, for us to meet our targets on wait times, we overstaff, if you will, or we make sure there's enough free agents so that as the volume ebbs and flows in a given hour, that we have free agents. And given these validations are very quick, we can pack a lot of it in the dead time. So we'll figure out ultimately, you know, how to staff that. And at least at present, that's also something I don't expect to charge for, is the validation.
And if you're not on one of the premium tiers, there are these access offers as well, which we've touched on, where you can essentially use Ira for free in certain locations and certain tasks as well. Do you want to just comment on the availability of those a little bit as well for people to use?
Yeah, I think, you know, I talked to the UK Explorers, and they're really excited for us to do more in the UK. So there are more offers that are usable. We as I mentioned at the top, we just launched with GTR. We don't have, in my opinion, enough free access offers in the UK as compared to the US. The US, we have over 250 different organizations. It's also where I think Ira and RNIB could partner better. We just haven't focused, and we haven't perhaps done enough with RNIB to access more companies. So if anyone out there is listening, we're always looking for introductions. I can talk a little bit about how access offers get made. But as an example, here in the US, everyone knows Starbucks. every Starbucks location in the US. It provides free IRA. We also have a retail store here in the US called Target, and you know, it's it has groceries, and it's, you know, it's a has a pretty wide range in selection, and it's low cost. Target provides IRA for free while you're at the store or for the website. Even though the website is accessible, sometimes folks want an agent to verify more details about what's in a cart. Sometimes there's a glitch. That's another example. We also have a state here in the United States called Alabama. Alabama provides IRA for free for every citizen in that state. And the list goes on, airports and banks, and we have 50 universities here in the US that provide IRA, as well as 20 or 30 different companies who provide IRA as an accommodation. I do know there's some people in the UK that work for like Amazon or Microsoft or Google or Salesforce. They use IRA for free because the employers are providing as an accommodation. So that's the concept. The challenge we have is getting into the conversation and finding companies who want to be early adopters in the UK, who see the value and understand that it's super easy to deploy and not that expensive. So it's all to say that it's IRA's goal to grow that access market in the UK. But I think the reality is right now there's not enough free offers, but we also have a free tier. So if forgetting the access offer, you can use IRA twice a day, 5 minutes free, and you'd be surprised. I'm surprised sometimes what people can get done just with the 5 minutes. And then if that's not enough, you can purchase a personal plan. But again, I think the goal of IRA is not to build our revenue, not to build the business on individuals, but instead to partner with government and commercial entities to provide this network.
If people are interested in getting access to Access AI and they want to try it out and they want to provide feedback, how can people get on this beta waiting list?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's you can download the app for free. If you've never used IRA, it's going to ask you to either enter a phone number or a email. You're going to get a code back into your text or your email, and then you're going to be in the app. And once you're in the app, there's an Access AI tab. And when you click on it, there's going to be a sign up form for the Access AI beta. And when you click that, you're just going to be asked a few questions. And then within a week or so, you'll be turned on so that Access AI tab now has the functionality. So we have a short waiting list. We're trying to make sure we don't let too many people in at once and kind of flood the system. So it's just a little bit of control, but ultimately, yeah, download the app, go to the Access AI tab, follow the instructions, get on the wait list. Equally, if you're more comfortable just using a computer, you can go to explore.ira.io. So just explore.ira.io. Same thing. You'll log in. It'll automatically create an account if that's your first time. There'll be an Access AI tab, and then you click into the sign up form and you'll be in the wait list.
All right, there you go. So that's the latest feature from IRA, Access AI.
Yeah.
Give it a go and let us know your thoughts. Let IRA know your thoughts as well. Obviously, that feedback is so important. And we look forward to seeing where this goes. Try to keep in touch as well.
Certainly. Well, thanks for having me on. And I hope you all have a great weekend. And let me know how the Access AI works. There's feedback in that form. We're just getting started. So I think we should all be excited about the future with AI.
Okay, fantastic. Troy, thanks for joining us on Connect Radio.
You join me here on R&IB Connect Radio at Somerset House in central London for the Canon World and Scene exhibition, a partnership between Canon and the R&IB. And we've stepped outside of the exhibition space in the courtyard of Somerset House, and I've got Ian Traherne, who's a visually impaired photographer, and Ian's photograph Future features in the exhibition. Ian, could you just sort of give me a little bit of a description of what Future is and who's featured in it?
Okay. So I'm a photographer with RP type 2, so I'm deafblind photographer. So I took a portrait for the World Unseen exhibition at Somerset House. It's a black and white image of a model called Olivia Dean. And the reason why I photographed her is because she is blind in one eye. She lost her eye due to cancer when she was 14 years old. But she's an inspiring model, as she really wants people to sort of embrace their differences and not wear a prosthetic eye. She wants to really encourage people to really be themselves.
And it's a black and white photograph. Do you photograph in black and white for a particular reason?
Well, one, I love black and white because I like the tones and the simplicity behind it. But also, I'm actually colourblind, so I do find working with colour quite difficult. But yeah, no, black and white, I'm a big fan of the highlights, the mid-tones and contrast. It gives a bit more depth to my photography because a lot of it kind of mimics my condition. So there's a lot of darkness sort of surrounding, you know, the portrait.
And when you're taking photographs, when you're looking through the viewfinder of your camera, can you see sort of all the detail and stuff and things like that? Or is it a case of taking a photograph and looking at it later on a bigger screen?
So what I can see is basically like a small pinhole, which is quite clear. So I've got about 5% central vision in the middle. So that's basically what I use to sort of study, you know, my photography and make any sort of corrections as I go along. A lot of time the pictures go onto a big computer screen, so it's kind of blown up, so I can see a little bit more. But yeah, I have a small central window in the middle.
And it must be fantastic having your photograph here on the walls of Somerset House with all the other sort of renowned photographers that are taking part in the exhibition. That must be fantastic to have that photograph there.
For sure. I mean, it's still sinking in. I haven't really quite processed it. You know, to be recognised as, you know, one of Canon's photographers is an absolute dream come true. You know, I started out doing photography, I know, about 15 years ago, so I never thought in a million years that I would have a portrait in Somerset House in London. So, and I've often been to Somerset House over the years, mainly for the ice skating rink. but I love it here. I love this place. I love the building. And, yeah, it's incredibly special. And what RNIB and Canon had done, you know, they've really gone to work, sort of showcasing a new way for blind people to experience photography by using elevated prints.
And what was it like sort of experiencing your photograph in an elevated print?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I wasn't really sure what to expect or what to feel or see, but it was such a detailed elevated print. You know, you could feel all the strands of the hair, the eyelashes and, you know, the eyes and the lips. Yeah, it's definitely a way of showcasing art and photography in mainstream exhibitions.
And you also recorded an audio description. How was that? How did you find that process?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, admittedly, I did have some help sort of describing the image, and we did like a recording in a studio, and I basically sort of read it out, and we actually did it in one take, so everyone was really quite surprised how well and easy that went. But yeah, no, it was good. It was really good to have a more in-depth understanding of what people were looking at.
And for somebody else who might be listening to us chatting now, we've got the bells going in the background, who might be thinking as a visually impaired person to get into photography, what would you say to them?
Well, I think if you got the desire and want to do it, I say pick up that camera and give it a go. Give it a crack. You know, don't worry about what society or public thinks. You know, you don't belong in one box. Blind people are varied people. So if you've got an interest and you want to do it and you want to have a go, give it a go.
And the Canon World Unseen exhibition is here at Somerset House from the 5th to the 7th of April. And if you can't make it to Somerset House, you can also go onto the Canon View website, which is canon.co.uk/view, where you'll be able to see Ian's photograph and everyone else's photographs and listen to the audio description. Ian, thank you very much indeed for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're welcome.
Tony, Toby Davey there reporting on World Unseen, the exhibition hosted by Canon in partnership with RNIB at Somerset House just a few weeks ago. Hubert, Callum, did either of you manage to get along to that one?
No, unfortunately I couldn't, but I would like there to be a bit more opportunities. Now we've seen what can be done, and now Canon has given us a bit of a flavour. I'd like this to hopefully inspire future exhibitions of this kind.
Yeah, same for me. I mean, I couldn't get down there either. Obviously, London is a fair bit of travelling for me. But I know this sounds really bad, I don't want to upset people, but I was a little bit kind of sceptical but intrigued at first when you hear about blind photography. I've always been a bit, well, I don't know how that works. But then listening to some of the clips and the interviews and discussions that we've had here about these events, it sounds incredible. I'm actually quite gutted that I missed out. So I'd love to see this more common as well.
I was lucky enough to go, and I do feel in a very privileged position there, because some of those tactile experiences were remarkable. You know, with the rhinoceros, you could feel the texture of the skin in contrast with the smooth shininess of the rifle being held by the rangers that were tasked with protecting the rhino. You could feel the ball under the foot of Chloe Kelly just before she scored that winning goal against Germany in the Euros. There was a very muscular one-armed swimmer, and you know, you could certainly feel the outline of his arm and his hand. So a lot more texture and detail in those images compared with traditional tactile diagrams that you would get on, say, swell paper. But I was very aware that that exhibition was in central London. It was only for 3 days. And I really hope, given the massive amount of media coverage, I mean, this was on BBC Breakfast, for goodness sake. I heard from somebody the other day that they'd actually seen a clip about it in Dubrovnik, of all places. So there has been a lot of coverage in not just the specialist, you know, print sort of media that, you know, deal with photography and printing and those sorts of subjects, those industry publications, but also mainstream media as well. And given the amount of interest in this, I hope that sends a really strong message to other curators and museums that actually you really can make your exhibitions much more accessible. That doesn't just enhance the experience for those of us who are blind or partially sighted, but actually for everybody, right? Because sighted people went into that exhibition. There were 700 people, right, went to the exhibition, but I think only about 40 blind people. And so most of those people were sighted, but they were all enjoying the audio and the tactiles along with the visuals as well. So actually, when you make something more accessible for blind and partially sighted people, potentially you enhance the experience for everyone.
Yeah, well, it's what we've always said, isn't it? You know, make it inclusive for everyone and accessible for everyone, and you just generally gives you the best experience. And it sounds like, as I said, this sounds unbelievable. When we hear about tactile images, this is all that I have in mind. You know, you mentioned the diagrams on like swell paper. That's all I can really picture, pun intended, when we talk about these tactile images. But this sounds like it was something else entirely.
Well, and also I think having synchronized audio makes a big difference. One of the challenges with traditional tactile diagrams is that you need to move your hands away to refer to a key. Often there are braille labels on a tactile diagram, but to read what those labels represent, you've got to take your hands away. So actually having a synchronized tactile and audio experience is almost, you know, greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, no, it sounds incredible. It really does. I'd love to see this more common and see this, you know, more across the country as well. Or, well, across the world even, given some of the coverage this has got.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, we'll leave it there. That's it from us here at Tech Talk this week. We really appreciate your company as ever. Do like and share and let us know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's the usual email address with all your comments, questions, voice notes, all that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavarkovich, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.